Watts, I have 18 watts right now, but I don't believe it's worth it. Thank you very much, and to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Wesley. Once again, this is the Limark Technical Net. Anyone has any technical questions or comments or subjects that they would like to bring up, please hit that push to talk button, give me your first name and call sign.
WB2BXO, Frank.
Yes, Frank.
Oops.
Yes, Frank. What can we do for you?
Hey, I just tuned in, so have you guys spoken about Field Day yet?
No, we haven't done it yet. I was going to throw that out next as a subject for if anyone wanted to discuss what they did this Field Day, where they went, what they did, if they had a good time or not. It was decent weather for it, thankfully. So hopefully some people would like to tell us about their Field Day experiences.
Yeah, very good. So if you want to go ahead, and then I'll talk a little in turn, see who else. And I do wonder how the KCRC did and whether you guys had a good time. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you might as well be first. I wasn't there this Field Day. I haven't heard from the guys. Unfortunately, our website is down. Mitch is apparently resuscitating it, so I'm not quite sure how anything went. I was listening for them on the radio, but I didn't hear their signal, but there were a lot of other people on the band, so it's not unusual that I couldn't hear them. But if you want to tell us how your Field Day went, that would be great.
Yeah, I was only on for a couple of hours from K3FI. That's here in, we were just outside Philadelphia in Albertthorpe Park here, operating 2A. I made a grand total of about 65 CW contacts on 40 meters the first couple of hours and before heading home for dinner. When we initially tuned up, we did not hear a thing on the higher frequencies. Could have been because the antenna wasn't tuned well. But texted with a friend on the West Coast who said he wasn't hearing anything on the higher bands either. So I, and when I listened this afternoon after, as Field Day wound down, conditions did not sound all that good. I mean, certainly better than in recent years, but I think conditions were disappointing for this point in the sunspot cycle. And I did not find KC2RC on 40 CW for the relatively brief period I was on there either, though I worked a couple of other NLI stations. Go ahead.
Yeah, I sort of noticed the same thing. I was watching the different bands. Yesterday, 20 was relatively more active than I usually see it. 40 was going crazy. There was not an empty space on my PAN adapter from all the way one end of the CW end to the phone end. A lot of activity going on. There was kind of medium activity that I could at least receive at 80 meters. My antenna, it doesn't work pretty much at all for 80, so I don't know how much of that it was my antenna. 10 meters was awful yesterday. Very, very rarely did I see any activity on 10 meters. As you know, Kings County Radio Club has a 10-meter net that I run Sunday mornings most Sundays, and I was there this morning. And we did actually, there was a little bit of an opening where I talked to two gentlemen from Ohio. One of them was confused. He had only been in the hobby for a year, and his Yagi was pointed in the wrong direction from Brooklyn. So I told him he must have had a side lobe or something going on. So 10 meters was awful this field day, but I didn't even look at 6 meters. But 20 was great, and 40 looked wonderful. I was very, very active. It was jumping all over the place.
Yeah, 40 was probably pretty good. We were running tuned wire fairly close to the ground, and still worked just about everybody we called, with the exception of some of the weaker stations or stations up further out in the Midwest where it was just too early in the afternoon. So conditions had all been pretty good on 40. I don't really know how 20 was. Anyway, as I said, conditions were at best mediocre. I think we'll see who else comes on here later. So I think the guys who did the whole event, I hesitate to call it a contest, a serious contest, these don't, are probably sleeping now. Anyway, we'll see if any of the real contestants, if Alan comes on here, maybe, and what he has to say. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, well, we'll see what develops. I would agree with you that the guys who really burn themselves out for that 24-hour period, I think the last thing they want to do is sit down in front of a radio again and chat on a repeater. So those guys are probably, sleeping it off, as it were.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, with, like Frank says, 40 meters, I agree. I stayed on CW. I just worked one Delta. One Delta is from the house. And I stayed on CW. But I can't go up to 20 until I get a different radio. My radio right now is only capable of 40 and 80, which was fine because, like Frank said, 40 was booming. So I was able to, go from one end of the dial to the other. Before I know it, I start getting duped. But then at nighttime, no problem. If you can get on 80, 80 was booming from one end of the dial to the other. Terrific. So, I'm anxious to eventually get, back on 15 and 20. But you guys were saying 20 was no bargain, so maybe I didn't miss anything. Back to you, Roy, WS1.
Well, I mean, 20 looked decent. It was 10 that was awful. It's like pulling teeth. It's like, you want to yell to the ionosphere, sunspot cycle 25 is already climbing. So, what's your problem? But it's very erratic in its opening. Like I said, this morning when I started my little 10-meter net at 11 o'clock, I was working all local. It took about a half hour for an opening to form connecting me with Ohio. And we had two contacts in Ohio, but by the second one, it was already fading in and out and disappeared. So 10 meters is not doing very good this cycle so far. I'm hoping for far better progress as time progresses, but the sunspot activity is not really doing anything magical to 10 meters these days.
Okay, and I missed Frank's section, and you know, with the 2 alpha or 3 alpha, yeah, I missed that. We'll have to go back to him, but back to you, Roy.
Okay, Frank, what were you operating?
Yeah, I was at the Holmesburg Amateur Radio Club down here. I guess we were actually just outside of northeast Philadelphia. Kilo 3 Fox item, operating 2 Alpha Eastern Pennsylvania. QSO? What happened? My Echolink, ah, damn. What happened to Echolink?
Okay, I don't know if anyone can hear me, but it appears that Frank's push-to-talk got stuck. So I'm sure soon he'll figure it out. Ah, Frank, your push-to-talk got stuck.
Let me see if I have it, Roy. Roy, we heard you. This is WS2N.
Okay, very good. What happens, unfortunately, Frank's program, it does Echolink. Occasionally, the push-to-talk gets stuck, and he lets go, but it doesn't let go. So usually what has to happen is he kills the whole connection, and then he links back, but he was able to reset it, according to what I'm interpreting on the Echolink. So, no harm, no foul, Frank. You just have to make sure that the push-to-talk releases. Unfortunately, your application doesn't always do that.
Anyway, I'm sure Frank can probably hear me. Anyway, I copied the information that he sent anyway. K3FI, 2 Alpha, EPA. And I did not work K3FI. I just checked my log. But very good. I did. There was plenty of Eastern Pennsylvanias and a lot of Pennsylvanias. Tremendous amount of locals, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Carolinas. But no K3FI. But anyway, thanks for that, Frank. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Paul. Anyone else out there want to tell us what they did this field day? What places they went to, what bands they listened to, how many contacts they made?
Yeah, that time the push-to-talk did drop on my end, but you guys disappeared, so I don't know if it was the same problem. Anyway, I am back. And I think you saw that I came back, I killed the application and came back on WB2BXO.
Yeah, it was very strange. It didn't, usually in the past, that's what it looks like to me. The window refreshes, you're gone, and then you log back in. But not only did it kind of get suck on your end and transmit, you know, when you got annoyed and upset. We could all hear you. But for some odd reason, there was an after image of your ID in the EchoLink window, so that I really didn't discern that much of a gap between your call sign disappearing and linking back up to us.
Yeah, EchoLink did not show I was still transmitting. I would have shut off the, I would have swiped out the app faster if I realized the app was still transmitting. It was showing in receive mode. So that was really kind of weird. Might have been something with the Wi-Fi on my end. Anyway, next time I see that happen, I'll swipe out the app more quickly so that you can use the repeater. Thanks for letting me know that happened.
Okay, no problem, Frank. These things happen. You know, software works in mysterious ways. We all know that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Kind of amazing it works as well as it does. I noticed there are a couple of quirks in it, but, you know, it's not commercial software. It's something I think you know, some volunteers put together, and I think that's pretty difficult to do for iOS and to get it into the App Store. So probably lucky it works at all. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's very nice of them to go to the trouble. It's not like they're making a buck off of any of this. You know, and they try to be helpful, sometimes more, sometimes slightly less. I run a SysOp EchoLink for Kings County Radio Club. So I noticed that once in a great while, it gets all of the audio devices confused, and it simply slides to a different group of options, probably. The operating system has an enumerator on the audio devices, and if one of the audio devices resets itself, they change their order, and that's reflected back on EchoLink. And I mentioned it to these guys that it does that, and their response is, it shouldn't do that. I said, well, it does that. They said, oh, okay, that's about it. So I'm not expecting them to come up with any solution. It's probably related to the operating system itself.
Now, that was weird just now. I hit the push to talk, but I was still receiving. And I know EchoLink is not full duplex. Anyway, every so often we hear those packet bursts on the repeater, like somebody has APRS going through the repeater or something like that. Okay.
Yes, I've noticed that. I'm not quite sure what the heck's going on there. I think it's just someone kind of pushing buttons, but it's a shame I don't have any kind of universal translator to see what kind of mode that might originally have been.
It sounds like good old-fashioned, what is old now, a 300-board AX25 packet is what it sounds like to me. And these days, the main thing that's used for on 2 meters, I think, is APRS, Automatic Position Reporting System. So it's probably somebody's APRS, and either it's actually on the input to one of your repeaters, or there's some mixing going on. That would be my educated guess. Go ahead.
Hey, Roy. John has an answer. On the chat room. He's got a TNT hooked up.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Yeah, I'm reading it right now. He says the packet burst looks like it originated from N2WGD-7. It looks like an APRS transmission. This is for normal voice transmission. There should be no AM carrier shift. For NTSC television, the modulating waveform is asymmetric. I think that's a different answer. I can confirm these packet bursts are coming from K2WDD. They look like APRS beacons. The packet burst just copied via the repeater into WGD-7TPTU6Q, wide 2-2, wide 3-3, and some other signals. So it's N2WGD who's apparently telling us his location using packet radio burst at 1200 baud. Now I talk of the devil and the devil appears.
Okay, I stand corrected. That's right. The 2 meters, I forgot, it's 1200 baud. The old packet is 300 baud on HF. That gets into the discussion I think we were having last week about bandwidth. Is a packet has to be limited to 300 baud on HF to keep within the bandwidth limitations on the digital band. But anyway, that was I was right about the AX25 packet. I misspoke on the baud rate, whatever it's worth. Go ahead.
Okay, very good on your part, and very good on KD2BD. Maybe someone should contact good old N2WGD and ask him why he's sending his APRS beacon packets to us. I guess there's some wrong setting on some radio he has. And, you know, I guess we'll have to look him up on QRZ and ask him why he's doing this.
My guess is he's going to say, I'm on the correct APRS frequency, and there's some mixing going on somewhere. And, you know, when somebody does the math, that would be, my guess is that's going to turn out to be correct. Go ahead.
Okay, you know, we'll see. If I have time and the inclination when the net's over, I'll see if he has an email address on QRZ, and if he does, I'll send him off a little, ask him to check his settings. You know, maybe he just has his APRS set wrong. Who knows?
I think it's going to turn out to be some mixing someplace else and not actually the fundamental frequency he's on. But it'll be interesting to hear what proves out once you guys look into it. Anyway, let me go on with the net. I don't want to belabor this too long. WB2BX.
Okay, very good, Frank. Once again, if anyone else out there has any stories to tell about this year's field day and would like to share, please hit that push-to-talk button.
I have a question of different nature.
Okay, Wesley, what's your question?
Hey, cholesterol. 40s, 50s, the total cholesterol 150 was normal and there was almost no heart attacks. Now, then later on, the 200 was kind of level of normal. And what is good, what is bad cholesterol? I'm kind of confused and tricky.
Okay, there's good lipids, there's bad lipids, there's high-density lipoproteins, there are low-density lipoproteins. The ratio between the two, it's best to have more of the high-density lipoproteins than the low-density lipoproteins. Cholesterol is always good to keep low, unless you're a very odd family. I believe in a small town in Italy, they have a genetic mutation in which cholesterol has no effect on their risk of cardiovascular disease. Unfortunately, high lipids and cholesterol are probably a lot more complicated than doctors and the public is completely aware of, because there are variations that make no particular sense. People who have the wrong type of cholesterol and have no history of heart disease. So there's a lot of problems with simplifying this problem. At one point, eggs was a definite no-no, and then eggs was kind of given a that in moderation, and all kinds of things jump all over the place. But generally speaking, it's the high density to low density ratios and the total cholesterol that tends to have an effect. But there are other factors, both known and unknown, that enter into a person's risk of cardiovascular disease.
What is HDL and LDL? What is the difference between those?
Well, as I mentioned before, HDL is the abbreviation for high-density lipoprotein. You want a higher percentage of your lipids to be in the high-density lipoprotein rather than the LDL, which are low-density lipoproteins. So it's the sort of the ratio of the LDL to HDL that seems to have a significant effect along with the total amount of cholesterol in your serum.
Yeah, what I'm confused is, it's good cholesterol and it's bad cholesterol. I'm a vegetarian for 3 years. So a question is, which one is good cholesterol? I know that you were talking about a ratio, but which one is good, which one is bad?
HDL good, LDL bad. But again, this is a bit of a simplification.
Okay, so HDL is good, LDL is bad. So LDL is supposed to be low. How low?
All things being equal, the lower the better. How much money is enough money? The lower it is, generally speaking, with an average person with no other risk factors, the lower their risk of developing cardiovascular disease.
And there is something like glucose. What it means that glucose is low or high?
Okay, now you're talking basically about diabetes or pre-diabetic glucose intolerance. You are supposed to maintain a approximate steady state of blood glucose. Glucose is the kind of general fuel that fuels most of your body. Sometimes you can switch it off over to fat metabolism, but sugar is the primary fuel. And you have islets of Langerhorne in your pancreas that produce insulin that interacts with your blood serum and is supposed to maintain a steady state. You don't want your blood sugar to go too low. You get hypoglycemia. You can break out into sweats and tremors and weakness. You don't want your sugar to run high. It coats your organs and clogs up your kidneys and leads to all the diabetic damage that we know from people who have been suffering from diabetes. So you want to have a fasting blood sugar below 100 milligram percent. But you don't want it to drop below, say, 60 milligram percent, because when you run out of fuel, you conk out. So, this is a very, very simplistic way of explaining diabetes mellitus.
What would be that level of glucose depends from somebody doesn't use sugar at all, doesn't eat cookies or anything sweet, where does it come from?
Well, any kind of starch can be broken up and turned into sugar. Proteins, to a degree, can be broken back down into sugar. The only thing in the way of nutrition that can't be turned back into sugar is fat. Once you've turned a molecule into a fat molecule, you can't kind of reverse engineer it in the human metabolism back into sugar, but everything else can be. So worst case scenario, if your body really needs sugar and it has nothing else, it will break down your protein and use that as the substrate to create sugar. Now, you know, if you are on a very, very low sugar diet, you can sort of train most of your body to metabolize fats instead of sugars. Your brain kind of really likes sugars. They will partially metabolize fatty acids, but to a degree, it's always good to feed them some sugar as well. But in the end, except for fat storages, anything that's in your body that's organic can be re-engineered back into sugar molecules.
So I'm going to repeat again. HDL is good, LDL is bad. But then we have two HDLs, HDL cholesterol and non-HDL cholesterol. What is the difference?
I'm not quite sure what you're alluding to there.
Okay. There is HDL cholesterol and there is non-HDL cholesterol. What is the difference between those two?
Okay, you could have just cholesterol. You could have free floating cholesterol, or you could have cholesterol bound with lipids, bound with proteins in HDL and LDL. So there's total cholesterol, and then there's HDL and LDL. Where it's bound. So I think that's what you're alluding to.
No, in the test, it looks like I'm okay, but in the test I have shown HDL cholesterol, and then I have another table saying non-HDL cholesterol. And that when I'm confused, because it says only about HDL, which is the good cholesterol, and 2-HDL.
That's a calculated number. All they're doing is they're subtracting your high-density lipoprotein from your total cholesterol number. So it's just a calculation on their part.
Nope. Thank you very much for the answer.
KG2R1.
Yes, David?
I have a question, and I'd like to share also with Leslie.
Okay.
I installed DaVinci Studio 17. I was able to get it up and running with effects, layers of video. When I go to render the video, it runs rather slow, you know. Do you know if there's any way to make the rendering a little bit faster? Go ahead.
Interesting. Let me know if you can hear me. How is my signal, Doctor?
Sounds fine. There's some loud noise in the background. I don't know if it's you or somebody else.
How about now?
Sounds fine to me.
Okay, thank you. Depends what format do you have. if you try and get a file, then the raw file is extremely time-consuming and short-consuming. So you have to have a good computer and good video card. Now, if you, and good, depends if you're using a hardware acceleration, the software acceleration, that I need to know. But usually, a WG are using Blackmagic RAW. But some simple formats like 286, it doesn't take much time and to exist.
So you're breaking up a little bit, but I get the idea. I'm running this 1080p resolution, and H.264 codec, 24 frames per second. It seems to work pretty good. I just have to wait for it to render.
Okay. Yeah, hold on. Let's make some changes before I answer. You are using 6.5 or 6.4?
I'm using 6.4 because I'm rendering 1080p.
So 6.4 is really, really not resources consuming. What is the configuration of your computer?
Could you repeat the last few words? Go ahead.
What is the configuration of your computer?
Oh, my computer's old. I'd say almost 10 years old. You know, I'm playing it off the system hard drive. It's a Fusion drive. So it has 128 gigabit SSD and 3 terabit HDD. And I mean, I understand that my computer is old and it's not as capable as it could be, but I was wondering if there's any way to speed up the rendering. Maybe I take a chance on losing some quality.
We talk about the bottleneck and we talk about the access to the hard drive. Use SSD, single SSD will actually make it rendering faster. But the format that you're using is really easy. Enter exe.
QSL, QSL. Well, you know, I was on the phone with Apple, must have been about a year and a half ago. I wanted to clean out my hard drive, erase it, and put the system in brand new. And put all the software in brand new, everything brand new. And then, you know, the person on the other end of the phone, you know, suggests to me to go into, I forget what this is called, it's sort of like a portal. It's like a portal where, you know, you can program. And he instructed me what to type in, you know. I was able to successfully erase both the SSD and the HDD. And set it up as a Fusion drive, you know, and I guess that was the instruction I got from him. So essentially, a Fusion drive is faster than a HDD, and, you know, that's how they did these hard drives back in 2012.
Yeah, DaVinci has a module called Fusion. Don't use Fusion at all. Don't use a special effect because you're going to have a problem with playing it. unless you're using proxy. Are you using proxy?
Yeah. Quarter resolution, you know. I can almost get it to work for playback, you know, depending on, you know, how many effects I'm using and how many layers of video. Go ahead.
Problem, no, you're playing, right?
Wesley, you're breaking up. Can you repeat that?
You have no jerky playing, right?
Well, you know, as for playback, there's proxy half screen and then proxy quarter screen, which takes up the least amount of computing power, and I can almost get it to work, but I think, you know, it's because my computer is old.
So, what I see here is a trick that you can do the hard drive SSD to have a faster faster transfer. And the other thing is, what kind of card do you have? The video card.
Hold on, I'm going to check. Hold on. About this Mac, display, storage, memory, support, so this overview, system, support, and what is a video card? NVIDIA Expert. This computer does not contain... I hold on a second, I try to find it. Graphics display, NVIDIA GeForce GTX 680MX.
That's the ancient one. If you go for RTX 3060 Ti, that's the good one. But it's kind of expensive and it has its own memory. So you have to have at least 32 gigabytes of internal memory on the graphic card, and you need to switch to hardware acceleration. Now, the...
QSL. A new computer would be great. But this computer is slow, but it works. It works really well.
I'm thinking about the next upgrade.
I think you mentioned something about operating system. This is the latest operating system for this computer. Beyond this, the computer doesn't accept.
The problem is that I'm only a professional with Mac, not with Mac, with Windows. Now, if you're using other platform than Windows, I cannot help. But if you're looking for good computer for Windows, I believe I'm gonna be able to help. But you need to contact me through the email.
QSL sounds good. And I guess, you know, I would have to get used to Windows, since I have been using a Mac computer since 1992.
This is the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club website at limarc.org.
The major problem between Windows is that Mac platform is quite more expensive, and you think that the new view is not, you need to go to either YouTube and check with Mac which Mac is actually to get to FCN.
QSL, QSL. Yeah, I've been looking at them. I've been looking at them, but I'm not ready to buy. So, you know, make small movies and I take my time rendering them. It seems to work pretty good, you know?
Okay, anyhow, contact me through the email. You'll find me on QRZ.
Thank you, Wesley, and have a great evening. KG2RY.
And to FC, and thank you, Dr. Roy.
You're very welcome. For people out there who weren't quite sure what they were talking about, Da Vinci is a very, very powerful editing suite. It started as a colorization adjuster and just kind of became a very, very powerful video editor suite. And for the high-end 4K plus high definition, you can either buy a keyboard and get a key for the software, or you could buy a key for the software. But if you keep it below 4K, you can actually download it from their website for free and try it out. It is, though, somewhat complicated. It's very, very powerful, and you can do relatively simple things with a relatively older computer. But if you wanted to do a lot of things at the same time, you kind of can't teach an old dog new tricks. So, you know, be prepared to either upgrade the computer or probably more cheaply buy yourself a computer kind of dedicated to graphic editing and such. But it's a very powerful piece of software, and it is free. But it does require a couple of, modern CPUs and such makes it run a lot smoother.
Yeah, a few words. Okay, there are two versions. One is Studio $299. It used to be $1,000, but now it has all of the modules. It's a killer. The primary version is free. It has all of the modules of version Studio, but it's free. There are some things that you can do with Studio and you cannot do with it, but actually you don't have to pay one single penny, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Now, it's not really difficult. I'm using DaVinci from the beginning of it. A few words about Blackmagic. Hold on. Okay, if I lose my signal, just let me know.
You're breaking up a little bit, Wesley.
Repeat again.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay, how about now?
Sounds all right. I'm wondering if it is some other noise on the frequency.
Yeah, we're not talking about it. It's just that I have not really very much fixed my Yagi, so it goes a little bit to the left, to the right. I have to adjust it. Then the noises or the nuisance there are simply helpless. Also, I don't want to go to the 100 watt power I'm using right now, 20 watts.
Go ahead, Wesley.
Okay, so Blackmagic started in the year 2002, and they were just an unknown company from Australia doing some kind of switches. And they became one of the players, the killers of the market. So we're talking about killer in the market, let's say in alarm industry, that was offering alarm systems for free, and they killed the alarm market. In the film industry, the killer is Da Vinci Resolve. They released the film camera that the camera that cost $1,200 and is absolutely competing with $160,000 Red. Or Alexa or any other very expensive camera. It really does a good job. Then Blackmagic released Blackmagic Pocket Video Camera 6K Pro, and this one I have with me. Panasonic decided to go for EVA1, which was absolutely great, a great camera, but they are too slow in upgrading. So we have Adobe Premiere. Adobe Premiere was making money like crazy, but in year 2009, they decided they want to have monthly charges. People hate monthly charges. They don't want to pay. So right now, with all of the models Adobe Premiere has, you can spend up to $600 monthly, while you pay one time $299 for DaVinci Resolve, which is much better and is used by Hollywood media, or Hollywood actually production. And this one, yeah, $299, and all of the upgrades are free. So now there is a version 17.9, I believe. I don't even have one, but you can go and you can download, and it's full support. So what they're trying to do is they're trying actually to take everybody from the market, and that's what they do successfully. And to XGN, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, I think they're up to Resolve 18, by the way.
Oh, that was probably one thing that I didn't hear, but when was that?
I don't know. I think it was recent, a month or so ago.
Beta version.
Oh, it's a beta version. It's 17.9 is regular version, 18 is beta. But beta is, I was trying so many betas with them, is absolutely great. The only thing is that it's good if you have a really powerful machine for it. And it's worth to have $2,000-$3,000 spent for the computer and have just one computer for years. It's really great. It's unbelievable. There is no program in the world that could do such a thing. And to XGN. Okay.
It's a good description of DaVinci Resolve, and as I mentioned, there's a 18 beta available. That'll hopefully soon come into non-beta stage. And the price is right, it's free. But, you know, although, you know, Wesley has used it from the very beginning, there is a learning curve with pretty much any really sophisticated video editing software. There are so many things that you can do with this type of software that it's not readily obvious from, you know, just starting it. So be prepared for a somewhat stiff learning curve.
Years ago, Sony Vegas sold, let's say, 2004 for about around $600, and then all of a sudden they sold themselves to Magic in 2012. That was a German company. And they did a good move. So Sony actually ended their participation in this area because they know what's going on with Blackmagic.
Well, yeah, I would agree that Blackmagic has perturbed Adobe endlessly although they're still probably making a profit. And also, I don't think Sony had their heart in software development per se. You know, I think ultimately at their heart, they consider themselves a hardware company.
Yeah, Panasonic has Veritex, even if I remember correctly, Veritex. Yeah, that was the camera that was competing with Alexa. But then there was Red. Red has a good reputation. And all of them, $50,000, $60,000, $150,000. So the mark for Panasonic camera was $29,000, and at that point, Blackmagic put on the market $1,200 camera. So many producers decided to take it, and then the big guys find out that it's a absolutely crazy camera. So Blackmagic went for Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 4K.
Gels's videos, specifically Adobe, and most of the software I have is not Adobe, but there is some.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Adobe was a great company, but they were too greedy. People don't want to pay monthly. Simple. And they decided not only to ask monthly, but anything else you want, yes, there is a module. And you buy the module, or you buy the access to the module also for monthly. And then it comes that you're in the middle of the job and there is an update and you're losing your job that you are working for 3 days for it. And DaVinci Resolve is different. Absolutely different. You don't have any module. You have a one-sided program that works.
Do you know about Final Cut Pro Motion?
Yeah, Final Cut Pro Motion doesn't work with Windows. And they really wanted it to not work with Windows because Apple platform wanted to sell something, and that's why higher grade computers were selling for those guys, because those systems were good. But the problem is that the DaVinci Resolve works with Apple's and with Windows, and modules or jobs that was partially done on Apple can be done right now on DaVinci Resolve. So DaVinci Resolve says, I don't care. I take everything you put in me, and I'm going to work with it. And it does it. The colors. This software was a colorist software. So Hollywood was using it for colorist only. And I remember when I had the time to put the voice on it, so I could have a regular movie on it. Guess what? Now it has everything. And it has graphics. You have a Fusion module in it. So you can do whatever you want to it. It's absolutely crazy. There is a Blender. Anybody heard about a Blender? Okay, Blender is a graphic program. It allows you to make simple graphics, but also complicated graphics. And you can have also modeling, so you can have your house model looks like almost like real. But it requires a lot of learning curve. Now, in Fusion, there is a module of DaVinci. You can do similar things.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you should explain to the people who aren't familiar with these things. Blender is a 3D a graphic program. So in other words, whereas something like Adobe Photoshop is two-dimensional for the most part, Blender lets you take geometric shapes and textures and form three-dimensional objects in them. So there's that difference between 2D and 3D going on.
That is correct, but the thing is that you can take file of Blender and put it into DaVinci, into Fusion. You can take any 3D file and you can put it into Fusion. And you can take any video and you can actually maneuver the Fusion. So many things you can do with it, and to exist.
What do you know about Adobe After Effects? I've played with Adobe After Effects, but in order to get Adobe After Effects,